Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman joins me now to answer our parenting questions. Hello, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well and great to hear from you again. And people can keep the questions coming in, texting us on 51551 or get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. We have an email here, David, that I want to start with. We got this into todaycb at rte.ie. Let's read it. My nine-year-old daughter keeps asking me how she can learn to love herself. Her confidence has diminished since she started struggling with maths in second class. She's now in third class. She complains that she has a doubting voice in her head, causing her to second guess herself at every turn. She's increasingly retreating into herself and is sad. Can you help with that one, David? That is sad. And we hear a lot about people who don't have confidence in maths, but there might be something bigger at play there, would you say?
Well, it's certainly worth checking it out. And so if they haven't yet had an educational assessment, that sounds like it might be a good place to start, because it may be that she is, has absolutely average or above average intelligence, but might be just experiencing what's called dyscalculia, which is like dyslexia, but with maths, that she might have just a specific difficulty with the maths. And I think that might help her in terms of understanding that this is not about her not being smart, that this is just about a specific difficulty. It also means then that any help that she might need can be tailored for her with regard to the maths. And so when it comes to children and their kind of self-confidence or their self-esteem, I think we need to be thinking about two main things: their sense of lovability and their sense of capability. So it sounds like her sense of her capability might be taking a knock with regard to her maths ability. And so that might be then about helping her to focus on a lot of the other stuff that she is really good at. And so where are her other strengths? What are the other either subjects that she's very good at, or what are the other things that she's good at in terms of sports or any kind of pastimes, you know, music, drama, dancing, whatever else it might be. And then, of course, you can also help her to build self-esteem in terms of her lovability. And so that's just about reminding her how she's really valued and appreciated by other people, that people like her company, you know, that she has lots of friends, that she's very much loved in her family. And so I think, you know, focusing on that kind of other good stuff for her might help to balance out the difficulty with the maths. But I think it does help as well if you can get a proper handle on what is the challenge she has with maths. And that might mean then that you can get the right kind of focused help that will allow her then to feel like she has a way or a strategy for overcoming the difficulties that she's having.
You need to know from the teacher as well, is there a problem with maths? Because I just worry sometimes if you go down the assessment route, David, is the message you're sending to the child, is there something we need to investigate here? Like maybe there isn't a problem.
Well, So I made an assumption that they had already done that. You're absolutely correct. Of course, your first port of call is to talk to the teacher. But if the mum or the dad, whoever contacted you, is saying that she's struggling in math, I just took it that that's something that had been kind of acknowledged
and maybe it has. We don't know, I suppose, whether it has or not.
But if it hasn't, absolutely the first place to go is to talk to the teacher and to find out, you know, what, if anything, the teacher is noticing. Because again, you know, does it seem like it's something very specific with the maths, or is it something that's more global? You know, are there other difficulties, other challenges that this little girl has with regard to academic ability overall? But, you know, if it's to do with the maths and the teacher, you know, reckons, yes, there is a specific difficulty here, then it's probably worth following through with a broader based assessment, just to understand what that is.
Well, let's move to an older child now. This listener tells us that my son is 19 years old, is in first year in college, and seems to be struggling with meeting deadlines and sleep and routine schedules. If he's in college early in the morning, he comes home and goes to bed and then is up all night. Day is night, night is day. I know he's an adult, but I still feel this needs to be addressed, and I'm worried about his mental health. They say they fear he may have ADHD, wondering if they should get him assessed, or I suppose because he's an adult, encourage him to get assessed, or is it too late, David?
Well, it certainly wouldn't be too late, but I mean, I think the key point here is that he is adult. And so that means that any kind of concerns that you have are concerns that you just need to sit down and talk with him. I'm guessing from the way that mom or dad again is talking that he's still living at home with them, because they're seeing that he's up all night. They're seeing that he's coming home from lectures and going straight to bed. So that maybe is not so much in my mind about ADHD, but it's just more about routine and about, you know, other issues, perhaps. you know, he's very connected into his phone. That has been, you know, clearly shown over certainly the last kind of 5 years or so that, you know, phones are the death knell to good sleep. And so there are an awful lot of young people, I think, who've made it through secondary school, getting to college, don't have the same level of structure in college as they might have had in secondary school, you know, again, either moving away from home to go to college, or even feeling like, well, now I'm an adult and so I can kind of make my own routines, and so really fall into terrible habits and terrible routines. And it may be that that's actually where this is all stemming from. And so again, though, you know, because he's 19, this is about the mom or the dad sitting down and giving really kind of tailored feedback in terms of what they're observing, because otherwise it'll just come across as judgment and criticism. And so this is about saying, look, I'm concerned about you. This is what I'm concerned about. And this is what I'm seeing. And so that's not a judgment. That's just an observation. And I think that's much more palatable for a 19-year-old. It might help them actually recognize, okay, I do have my own issue. And then, as you say, it's about encouraging them perhaps to go get the right kind of help. And so there will be student counseling services. So if it's not necessarily that there's a specific neurodiversity there, but that it's to do with routine and so on, and building good habit, it might be that the university counseling service will be of benefit there. Otherwise, it might be something that they're saying to their son, look, let's go and see if we can understand it better and get it assessed just in case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I hope that helps that family. This next one, we have a 10.5-year-old boy. He has no siblings. We love him to bits and he has an amazing life. He's very sporty and sociable. We've always been open with him in relation to death and dying, and he has been to some funerals with us in the last few years. Up to now, he seemed very unfazed by death and quite happy-go-lucky. This changed overnight just after Christmas. He started crying out of the blue one day, and after some time he told us that he's so afraid of us dying and him being alone and what would happen to him. He's also afraid of dying himself, but not as much. We reassure him, we hug him and explain that it's normal to feel like that and it's good to talk, but I can't reassure him enough and I can't make promises that I can't keep. It's going on nearly 3 weeks now. Any advice greatly appreciated.
So, I mean, I think it's a not unusual experience for lots of families that their son or daughter hitting around the age somewhere between 9 and 11 will have this just existential crisis, essentially, about death and the, you know, what death means and the finality of it. They come to understand what it means in terms of, you know, the person being gone. And naturally, then that leads to a lot of fear about their specific circumstances and about their parents' well-being and whether their parents are going to be around in the longer term. So I think it's not anything to be overly worried by in terms of it being something that's, you know, as I say, really common, and that at some point every human being has to go through some kind of existential crisis about death, and we all have to come to terms with death and the fact that we will all die and learn to, I suppose, you know, adapt ourselves around that. And so I think it is about just the listening to him, acknowledging it, and it sounds like the mum, you know, has a really good perspective here, because she's not over promising, she's not guaranteeing that, you know, herself and his dad are going to be there in the long term, because they just don't know. You know, these are things that we can't guarantee. So but I think it's just about the acknowledging, the listening, the empathizing. You know, it sounds like, you know, that mightn't be enough, but ultimately this is something that the 10-year-old lad is going to have to kind of get his own head around. And so what he needs is you know, the old adage, a problem shared is a problem halved, because you can't fix it, you can't make death go away. And so this is just about acknowledging that it's okay for him to feel like this, but that also this will be a temporary thing, that this is something that he just needs to kind of work his way through, and that he will come to the understanding that actually, even though you can't guarantee that people are going to be around in the long term, the likelihood is that they are going to be around for many, many more years to come, and that all will be okay, and that he will be minded and supported, and that his parents are going to be there.
Okay, well, David, we time now for another quick ish one here at the end. This is an 8-year-old grandson, and we're hearing from the grandparents here, who still wets the bed most nights. He wears a disposable nappy. He doesn't appear to be too bothered, although his 5-year-old sister never wets the bed, and he says he can't have sleepovers with friends. He has a lot of disturbances in his life and parental strife, but these don't bother his sister. We've tried the usual methods to no avail. During the day, he leaves running to the toilet until the last minute and occasionally has accidents. Do you have any tips?
So it sounds like he physiologically may not be getting good messages that his bladder is full. And so, of course, that's what allows children to wake up in the middle of the night if they need to go to the bathroom. And so that sounds like he needs some kind of, kind of bladder awareness training, which sounds very dramatic. But really what it is just encouraging him to notice that super full feeling, that bursting to go feeling, and encouraging him to notice it sooner so that if the adults around him see him, you know, suddenly getting kind of twitchy, or, you know, he's kind of crossing his legs, or he's clutching at himself to stop himself wetting himself, you know, that those are all the signs for adults around to go, oh, it looks like you might need to go to the bathroom. You know, maybe your bladder feels like it's full, ready to burst. And so it's about helping him recognize these physiological signals. The other thing that I certainly in my own experience over the years and talking to other parents that is most helpful is the kind of pants that you can get that are connected to an electrical sensor, and that as soon as, so the child wears those going to bed, as soon as any wee starts to come, that sets off a buzzer alarm and wakes the child up. That I think is the most effective way to try and help a child with bedwetting. But what you also find, particularly with boys, is that a lot of the time it's simply about physiological development, and some boys just don't mature in terms of wetting the bed until they hit kind of 11, 12 and sometimes even as much as 13.
Okay. All right. So it might be a case of waiting that one out with a little help as well, as you have described so well. David, thanks so much. Great to have you with us as always. David Coleman. And don't worry, David will be back with us in a few weeks. So keep the questions coming in, and we try to get to as many as we can.